Your virtual regular meeting of the Richardson Bay Regional Agency Board of Directors. My name is Jim Wickham, your chair. And our first order of business is to call the roll, please.
Sure. Board Member Kulik?
Here.
Board Member Winter?
Here.
Vice Chair Sears?
Here.
Chair Wickham?
Here. Okay, we have a quorum present, so we are duly constituent to conduct business. Very good. All right, the first item on our, can you hear us, Kate? Can you hear me okay?
Okay, I good. Can
our
now.
First item.
Yeah, there you go. Now it's good. Before it was a little dim. Yeah.
Okay. The first item on the business is the consent agenda. We have five items. Yeah, first of all, is there any board member who'd like to pull an item off the consent calendar?
Yeah, I'd like to pull item A as an alpha.
Okay, item A. Is there anyone from the public who would like to pull an item from the consent calendar? All right, seeing none, can I get approval from the board for items B, C, and D?
Can you I'll take move.
Second.
Beth, you want to take a roll?
Sure. Board Member Kulik?
Yes.
Board Member Winter?
Aye.
Board Member Sears?
Yes.
Board Member Wickham?
Aye. Okay, we'll approve, we'll pull item A. So, David?
Yeah, it was just the minorest of typos, but it stuck out to me. Page four, paragraph four, Mr. Romanowski's name and the second word has a zero in it, I believe. Just a minor typo. That's it.
Okay. All right. Can I have any public comment on that? Hearing none, can I have a roll call vote or have a motion to pass item A?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, Kate, second. Roll call, please.
Board Member Kulik.
Yes.
Board Member Winter.
Aye.
Board Member Sears.
Yes.
Board Member Wickham.
Aye. Approved. Thank you very much. Okay, item number three on the agenda is information item, presentation on community efforts. Do we have anyone today to give us an update on what's going on?
I believe Doug Storm was going to attempt to participate, but I don't see him currently in the room. Just scanning for anyone else to raise their hand as the representative. I don't see any other names that typically make those presentations present at the moment.
Okay. And Kate Sears and I have not had a chance to have any coffees with the Mariners because of COVID-19. We're still in place, but we're looking forward to the near future of getting together and doing some more outreach with our partners. Board members, do we have anyone who has anything to, Kate, anything to say?
No, unfortunately.
Okay. Right, we'll move on to item number four, the Richardson Bay Anchorage Transition Plan. Beth, you want to give us a report?
Yes, I'm going to do a share screen for this. You all see it okay?
Yeah.
Oops. Okay, let me start out. Okay, and minimize this. Okay. Thank you, Chair Wickham. This item this evening is a culmination of work that the agency has been performing over the last 2.5 years. It started with the board establishing guiding principles and then engaging with the public on options for the future of the anchorage, undertaking data and information collection and analysis, a key point of which was a 2019 ecologically based mooring feasibility and planning study and surveys of eelgrass and bathymetry of the bay. Also, the board engaging in discussions with anchorouts about safe and seaworthy conditions for vessels on the bay that culminated in adoption of an ordinance that clarified it and update ordinance standards for vessel conditions. And the board has also furthermore collected further information about other anchorages and information from the public about impacts and concerns, as well as sensitivity to the historical traditions of anchoring in Richardson Bay. That has all culminated now with the presentation of this transition plan. This was presented to you in draft form at your March meeting. In April, the RBRA did make a presentation to the Enforcement Committee of BCDC. We took some of those comments into consideration in finalizing a proposed plan for your adoption consideration this evening. And that encompasses five key points, as you'll see on the screen. The first item of note I want to point out is the vision that the plan encompasses. And I'm going to read it for the benefit of people that may be on the phone. Vision for the proposed vision in the transition plan that will guide the board's future endeavors. It reads as follows. Richardson's Bay has essential value as a recreational and environmental resource where eelgrass and the ecological systems it supports are increasingly protected, preserved, and restored. Vessels on the anchorage become safe, seaworthy, operable, and compliant with other requirements, and the number of occupied vessels diminishes over time. All of this has an underpinning goal of achieving a safe, healthy, and well-managed Richardson Bay. The principles that will also guide the board's actions and policies going forward is affirming the bay as a temporary anchorage only, and preventing additional vessels from extended stays. It will exercise its discretion to conditionally allow occupy legacy vessels, which we'll define later, that comply with RBRA requirements to remain for a limited period of time, that the agency supports initiatives for relocating occupants of vessels to alternative housing, realize a decreasing number of occupied vessels over time, and protect and promote eelgrass habitat and growth. Finally, before I get into more of the specific areas of the policy direction, just to give you an overall summary of the components of it, the policy direction in the plan includes no unoccupied vessels and no extended stays for incoming vessels, a safe and seaworthy program, which the harbor master will get into more detail in his part of this presentation later. But that program is for eligible vessels to improve vessel conditions, comply with requirements, and stay for a period of time. Again, outreach to connect persons on the anchorage with housing and also pursue efforts to create more housing. That there will be a sunset date for the anchorage to allow occupied vessels on the anchorage as a discretionary enforcement priority. And then eelgrass protection and restoration measures. To dive in just a little bit on the policy direction elements, as noted, this is a continuation of what the board has already adopted as an enforcement priority. And that is to enforce unoccupied vessels. Often these are called storage vessels. But the priority is that there shall be no unoccupied vessels on the bay, even those hooked up to other boats that are on the bay that may be occupied, but it's one boat per occupant / vessel. Also note, the incoming vessels are subject to the time limits in the RBRA code, which requires a permit in order to anchor more than 72 hours, although the harbor master is authorized to issue a limited number of 30-day anchoring permits, limited meaning limited number to the vessel. The Safe and Seaworthy program, which again, we'll get into more detail later. This is fashioned as a discretionary determination by the agency to defer enforcement of the agency's time limits on eligible vessels that meet all other RBRA requirements, as well as state and federal regulations for vessels. The vessels that will be eligible to enroll in this Safe and Seaworthy program are those that were on the August 2019 census that was taken by the Sheriff's Marine Patrol Unit. They will need to undergo vessel inspections by RBRA, and during those inspections, the harbor master or the assistant harbor master will identify for the occupants the improvements that will be needed to meet the requirements of the program. Those that become compliant with the required vessel conditions and other rules will become eligible for a designation as legacy status and eligible for deferred enforcement of time limits under the RBRA code. However, they must continue to maintain those requirements on an ongoing basis. The policy direction in housing is really focused around connecting people with other places other than a boat on the water to live on. It recognizes the unsafe nature of living on the water, particularly vessels that are in marine debris condition, and that's where one of the areas of priorities we've pulled out is vulnerable people, vulnerable vessels. That will be a priority going forward under the plan to work towards helping them to relocate to safer conditions for themselves. Really expanding even more the outreach connections that have already been made. The board this past year authorized a contract with Andrew Henning, who has been instrumental in coordinating a variety of agencies and case managers and outreach workers to connect with people on the water and also look for opportunities for more housing on land for people to move into. This plan envisions expanding housing opportunities. That may include liveaboard marina slips, so that we're going to talk about that a little bit later at the end of the presentation. But overall, just encouraging more and more connection and helping people that we can to who are interested and willing and we can find housing for to move off the water, or in those cases where we do have to abate the vessel, that we can connect them with an alternative. The transition plan envisions a sunset date by which occupied vessels will no longer be considered deferred enforcement for time limits, that there will be an end date under which occupancy of the bay takes place. There'll be factors the board will be considering in setting that date. Obviously, need to consider what are the alternatives for the people in an effort to avoid homelessness, and also the agency itself and what grant resources are available to manage that final transition period. Eelgrass is a critical element of the transition plan, as well as a critical component of the ecosystem of Richardson Bay. This transition plan lays out exploring potential designation of zones for varying levels of vessel usage, as well as eelgrass restoration protection, such as having a zone that's a clear restoration zone where anchoring would not take place and where restoration efforts would be particularly focused, with the assurance that they would not, such efforts would not be disturbed. An eelgrass protection zone where there could be some specific protection measures regarding ground tackle usage and deployment, whether vessels move or don't move, whether there's a moorings as a ground tackle alternative, etc. That would be explored. And then finally, an anchoring zone, which would be where the anchorage sees that over the long term, that temporary usage of the anchorage for visiting vessels would be located. All of this is way too expensive for RBRA to even consider undertaking on its own. Fortunately, there are a lot of agencies and organizations that recognize the importance of eelgrass, and we would partner with them to seek funding for research and protection and restoration. One of the agency's guiding principles is not to adopt plans and policies for which there are not sufficient resources. We wanted to make sure you were aware of the resources that are available for supporting the implementation of this plan, which also informs the timelines that are under consideration in this plan, both in the safe and seaworthy portion, as well as the eelgrass section and housing as well. As you can see, it's staff, it's local agency assistance, it's grants from federal and state sources for both housing and for eelgrass, as well as a vessel abatement. At this point, I'm going to pause and ask if the board has any questions on the overview of the transition plan. The next step will be Curtis will go over the requirements and timelines regarding the safe and seaworthy program and other aspects. And then the last component, I'll come back and go over the BCDC draft presentation. But until then, are there any board member questions of the transition plan overview? Hearing none, I think I can say, take it away, Curtis Havel, our harbor master, who will be taking over as the administrator of the agency July 1st and will be responsible for implementing and administering the program he's about to describe.
Okay, great. Thank you, Beth. Mm-hmm. So the Safe and Seaworthy Program, of course, it's the central concept of this program is embedded in its title. We're aiming to have a safe anchorage, and the way that we get a safe anchorage is by having seaworthy vessels. So, you know, there's many, many stories of folks who are, you know, 2 a.m, the seas get rough, their anchor starts to drag. What do you do? So if you have to run up on deck, you need to have a clear deck to get to your ground tackle to retrieve your anchor. You need to be able to start your engine and navigate your way out of trouble. These are critical issues that are truly a standard part of boating. It's built it. If you own a vessel, if you occupy a vessel, it's just a fundamental basic knowledge that you know how to operate the vessel and make sure that you don't get yourself into a situation that you can't get out of. So, you know, the primary objective, we want to avoid injury or death. Having a seaworthy vessel means that you're not endangering yourself and you're not endangering the people around you and you're not endangering folks along the shoreline. You're not endangering the environment. When we talk about having a seaworthy vessel, that's, you know, a big part of it is being aware of your surroundings, meaning you're not dumping into the bay. You've got an adequately functioning sewage system. Your boat's clean. It's an addition to the environment, not a hazard to the environment. Ultimately, Richardson's Bay is a 72-hour anchorage. It's been that way since the inception of the RBRA and the adoption of our original ordinances. That's been memorialized in the Code of Federal Regulations, Section 110.126A. It's been memorialized in the United States Coast Pilot Volume 7. And the Safe and Seaworthy Program really works towards creating an anchorage where functional seaworthy vessels are safe to anchor and they're not a hazard to themselves or those around them. The other nice thing about the Safe and Seaworthy Program is it's really an attempt not only to increase safety, but to help people realize their dreams. A lot of times, folks, you know, they get a boat and they buy into the dream. They want to go somewhere far away, somewhere trop, somewhere lovely. And in order to do that, you need to have a seaworthy boat. So this is an opportunity to really encourage people on the water to get their boats in proper functioning order so that they can realize their dreams, so that they can take that trip that they've been dreaming of for many years. The other thing about this program that I think is important to point out is it brings clarity to the expectations out on the bay. And I think that that helps reduce the amount of uncertainty. So if people understand what the requirements are, what the expectations are, I'd like to think that's, I know it sounds perhaps a little bit backwards, but I'd like to think that's a compassionate approach, because we're being clear about what the expectations are, and then we set the bar and folks can strive to achieve that objective. I'd like to think that as vessels become more seaworthy, there's going to be a certain pride that people take in their vessel. You know, they've cleaned up their boat, they've got the helm working, they've got the engine working. They're getting every day, they're hopefully getting closer and closer to setting sail and realizing their dreams. And ultimately the Safe and Seaworthy program is, you know, the underpinning of it is to make sure that, you know, Richardson's Bay is no longer a storage lot. It's not a marina. It's a place to come and drop anchor temporarily. You know, there's an opportunity to go enjoy Sausalito, enjoy Marin, and then continue on your voyage. And that's you know, a properly managed anchorage should be like that. You know, I would think at any given moment you might have anywhere from, you know, 5 to 20 vessels coming through given, you know, the time of year and conditions. So when we talk about the timelines for this program, we're, you know, the pandemic sort of threw a monkey wrench into things, but, you know, as the shelter in place requirements are being rolled back and we're adjusting to the new normal. I don't want to say getting back to normal, because I don't know if that's an actual thing, but as we become to a, you know, adjusting to the new normal, we're looking at July 1st, 2020 kicking off the enrollment program or notification enrollment. So we'd be distributing information in the anchorage, providing handouts to folks out there. And really just at this point, we've got a pretty good database of vessels in the anchorage. The current count is at 124. From the original August 2019 census that was performed by the Marin County, that number is probably, you know, if you remove vessels that are newly arrived to the anchorage, we're probably at a count of about 110 right now. So we'd make sure that those folks have the handout materials, you know, understand what the program entails. Then we'd be looking at enrolling in the Safe and Seaworthy program by October 15th, 2020. So this program, by enrolling in the program, it's going to hopefully give you a leg up. I should also mention, as we begin going through the Safe and Seaworthy program, I was just recently notified that funding was granted for the Richardson's Bay Anchorage Safe Boating Fund. So that's a branch of the Richardson's Bay Special Anchorage Association. And it's that's seed money that will help kind of push towards, you know, providing some resources to folks who are earnestly improving their vessels and getting them ready to go. One of the points of our transition plan is that we will continue to encourage and seek out, you know, private funding or grants or philanthropies that can assist vessel owners in preparing their vessels for, you know, for moving on, for taking that voyage. Moving from there, when we start doing the enrollment program, both myself and the assistant harbor master will be going out and verifying information in the anchorage of folks who have enrolled in the program. We will be doing inspections of vessels and identifying where they are not complying with our codes and our standards. And we'll put that in writing. We'll memorialize it so that again, those expectations are clear. I should mention here, if Beth alluded to it earlier, these standards that are incorporated into the Safe and Seaworthy program, they are taken from our existing RBRA code. They're taken from the California State Department of Boating and Waterways code. They're taken from the navigational rules, also known as the coal regs. So this program is really rooted in an existing regulatory framework that already exists. So it's simply memorializing and implementing, in a working program, all of these different requirements. So between October 15th, 2020 and October 15th, 2021, we would be working towards certification of vessels into, making sure they meet those the requirements of the Safe and Seaworthy program. Vessels that for vessels and occupants of vessels that don't enroll in the program, that puts them on a trajectory for leaving the anchorage. So there will be an enforcement process to follow up on that and help them move along. During the certification process, if there's funding available, we'll constantly keep an ear to the ground, trying to find sources of funding to help out people. The RBRA doesn't have that kind of money, and frankly, we'll continue looking for innovative and collaborative ways to try to help people out on the anchorage. The other big component of this is when you look at having a seaworthy vessel, that means that vessel, let's say somebody's just not ready to take that trip yet. They're not ready to go on that journey, that sailing voyage, wherever they're going to go. Once their vessel becomes seaworthy, once it qualifies for the Safe and Seaworthy program, that means that vessel is hopefully now insurable. So that means that if somebody couldn't have previously gotten into a marina, now hopefully they can. So one of the aspects of this program is obtaining a current registration, whether it's through the California Department of Motor Vehicles or the United States Coast Guard Documentation Program. So that's a, key part of the paperwork chain that, helps somebody stay out of trouble with the Coast Guard and helps them get a foot in the door for into a marina. So then finally, we're looking at the deadline for compliance with RBRA requirements. We're setting that at October 15th, 2021. Once a vessel complies with those seaworthy requirements, the RBRA would retain inspection privileges to make sure that vessel continues to comply with the seaworthiness requirements. Once a vessel fails to maintain compliance with those requirements, then they're subject to removal as an enforcement priority. And then, Beth mentioned this, but the sunset date for occupied vessels. So part of the idea is if somebody can bring their vessel up to a seaworthy standard, that means they're not necessarily a hazard to the folks around them, the shoreline, the environment. That buys them a little bit more time at the anchorage. In terms of a sunset date for occupied vessels, that's something we're looking to your board for guidance on tonight. And then the last point I'll close on is, the Safe and Seaworthy program it's something that if you look back at the program that was started by the Richardson's Bay Special Anchorage Association a couple of years back, I believe they called it their Burgee program. This is really just an extension of that. So it's building off of, I think, what was a good idea coming out of the anchorage, and it's simply setting a more clear expectation and standard for how the Anchorage is going to be managed moving into the future. And I am happy to answer any questions you might have about the program, about the finer points of it, if you have any questions.
Thank you, Curtis. Kate, you have any questions? Dave?
No, I think the obviously the timeline is aggressive, and particularly with COVID-19 still being part of our world. So it seems to me there's some degree of uncertainty here. But I would take these timelines as objectives that may be challenged by reality. Do you think that's fair, Curtis?
It is. And something, you know, Beth and I wrestled with. So the pandemic and then just things going on with our society right now. You know, on one hand, there is movement, there is progress being made. And I do feel like we can begin moving forward without putting anybody at risk or creating a hazard or, you know, a danger. You know, exposing people to either COVID-19 or other types of civil unrest, you know, as it pertains to land-based stuff.
I think the most immediate deadline is the enrollment program, which I think they'll be able to use safe distancing measures that are in place at that time as the program rolls out. So, and that's really, since that's the focus, I think that we can take advantage of the time that we have in good weather months to conduct that portion of it.
Great, thank you.
Curtis, I do have a question, and that is, I didn't notice in your timeline a provision for some sort of community outreach and information dissemination. There's a lot of information here. Many people out in the Anchorage, I don't think, have mailing addresses. So I'm sure that you've contemplated in some way, shape, or form getting this information out to them and making sure that they understand it on a relatively granular level.
Yes, it's going to be a multi-layered approach. So I'm going to be cooperating and counting on my colleagues in, you know, the outreach teams. I'll be providing them with information so that they can pass that along to folks who show up at the showers or the some of the hot meals. And frankly, it's going to be a door-to-door kind of operation out in the Anchorage, going and doing the work, you know, going door-to-door and providing the information and handing them my card and phone number and email address and saying, please reach out to me if you have any questions, if this doesn't make sense. And trying to work it that way, you know, help provide my time and, you know, help people walk through it if they need help walking through it.
Thank you.
David, you had a question?
I did. Yeah. Curtis, I wonder if you could spend just a minute. I might have missed it in your presentation, but I saw it in the packet where the enforcement priorities, the requirements policy and enforcement priorities talks about it. But could you speak a little bit to vessel occupancy and the transferability of the occupancy on a registered vessel or lack thereof?
Sure. So once a person enrolls in this program, that vessel is, a vessel is always transferable, if you go through the proper process. So if I sold my vessel to you, I'd sign my title over to you. You'd make sure, you know, the DMV or United States Coast Guard, it would be all updated. But in terms of this program, once the vessel is enrolled in the program, that vessel is no longer transferable. So it's linked to the occupant. What that does is it prevents sort of a musical chairs vessel trade from happening. Right now, what I've been seeing in the Anchorage is an individual might bring in more than one vessel, and they have someone staying on that vessel who doesn't actually own the vessel. So they're not on the title. They don't necessarily know how to operate it. They're just kind of staying there. Their friend's doing them a favor. Making it so that the vessel's not transferable kind of keeps that from, it keeps someone focused on their vessel. It gets difficult to keep track of the progress of the ongoing seaworthiness of a vessel if the ownership continues to change. And frankly, occupancy, the other thing is we're, you know, I've been keeping an eye on a certain number of vessels out in the anchorage that folks say that they're living on, but I don't see them on the vessel. Whether I go out early in the morning, late in the evening, maybe they visit the vessel once on the weekend. That's really a case where if the boat was in a marina, that's fine to do. But in the anchorage, you know, the anchorage is not a marina. It's not a storage yard. So I think the folks who are using the bay as, a storage location, need to rethink that strategy. Furthermore, I think using the bay as a storage location, you know, keeping your boat out there and then putting your friend in the boat and thinking, oh, well, great. Now it's occupied and, you know, RBRA can't touch me. That's not consistent with what we're trying to accomplish here. It's not consistent with making that a seaworthy vessel and really creating a safer environment out on the bay for everyone.
And just to jump in a little bit here, the vessel can obviously, someone can sell their vessel. It just means it will no longer be eligible for legacy status and deferred enforcement priority on the bay. So they can sell their vessel and the vessel can go elsewhere. But the idea is that the people who are on the that as long as someone who was on the vessel remains on the vessel who was on the vessel when it was enrolled, it can and it conforms to all the other requirements to contain it. It can maintain its legacy status. But once there's a turnover of people, it's going to lose that legacy status.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. I've seen for last 15 months, we've been pretty well incorporating a lot of these transition plans to these guidelines. I agree with Kate with COVID-19. It might put a wrinkle into it, but I believe they're workable for you, Curtis, right now. So, I think the board has some discretion down the line if we finally get ourselves into a jam, but you want to talk about the BCDC Enforcement Committee presentation now, this next point, before we go to that public open time?
Right. Let me conclude the agenda item with the last element, which is the draft presentation for the BCDC Enforcement Committee, which is on July 9th. In your packet is a written draft. Just summarizing the areas that we would focus in on a response, as well as the letter we received from BCDC staff outlining the concerns the committee expressed when it last heard from RBRA on April 9th. So to cover the elements of the BCDC letter, that includes that the request from BCDC for RBRA to provide a policy proposal that results in removing all illegal anchor outs from the bay within 5 years. That's the direct quote. Oops. And what the draft response notes is that the way the transition plan is formatted, it will result in a similar goal of removing vessels that are unseaworthy and unsafe by removing vessels that are failed to comply with RBRA requirements within 2 years, achieving the outcome of safer, healthier, and better managed anchorage, and that the RBRA would be setting a sunset date for all the occupied vessels that BCTC referenced, and we'll need to consider various elements about housing and grant resources in that determination. BCDC asked how RBRA standards will align with marina berthing requirements, and Curtis covered this in his presentation already, but just to note that our safe and seaworthy requirements are in alignment with marina berthing requirements for a liveaboard slot. How is RBRA coordinating with marinas to include a plan to abate abandoned vessels? Apparently what this means is for those vessels that are left in marinas and otherwise would go on to Richardson Bay, someone would either buy it or take it, or somehow they would end up on the bay. How is the RBRA going to stem the tide on that? Frankly, RBRA's capacity to abate vessels in marinas is really dependent upon how much money is received from boating and waterways abatement resources and what the anchorage needs are. And of late, we've really needed to focus on the immediate issues of derelict vessels coming into the bay or unoccupied vessels and marine debris condition and other conditions needing to be removed. And we don't have a capacity to expand into abating vessels in marinas in Sausalito, let alone the Bay Area. I mean, vessels come from all over the Bay Area into Richardson Bay, and we can't take on that responsibility. But we would urge BCDC to help lead efforts because they have more of a bay-wide reach that they could employ to help achieve a similar outcome. We're concerned about one-time vessel replacement provisions and wanting instead the agency to remove vessels and provide alternative housing. Just need to note up front that RBRA is not a housing provider. We don't have it's not our part of our mission or authority to, or resources to provide housing for people. The RBRA has stepped in the last year to really take a more active role in trying to connect people with housing alternatives and try to find additional housing, and we can continue to do that. But meanwhile, as far as the replacement issue, I would just note that many of the occupants of vessels on the bay would fall into the low to very low income category, and as such have very few resources and options relative to the general population when it comes to addressing issues and finding housing and other just options in life, very limited. There's probably a rare opportunity where someone would have the wherewithal or the luck to have a replacement vessel that meets all the standards, but if they did, we've modified the provision to authorize the harbor master to consider the safe and seaworthy program objectives and whether that helps, that replacement would help achieve those. Lastly, BCDC asked a number of questions, some very specific about eelgrass restoration, and our response is to point them to the data information we've already received that's going to be a foundation for future planning and policies and projects, including working with stakeholders and other organizations to look at the anchorage zones for protection, restoration, and anchoring, as I outlined earlier, consider crown tackle and mooring options and other specifics for protecting, and also pursuing projects, notably research, and for determining best practices, what is where and under what conditions is planting advantageous over natural restoration, vice versa, and seeking funding. We're pleased to see that Senator McGuire has signed on to an effort an interest in having a collaborative approach to getting some funding for eelgrass restoration, and there are other federal and state and regional sources that the agency would pursue, again, working with others. And that concludes the presentation. Be happy to address any questions that you have.
Well, thank you, Beth, and thank you, Curtis, very much. Excellent report. We will have public open time. Board members, are any other questions for Beth? Okay, seeing none. There I am. I had a technical issue with my home computer, and I had it switched over during this presentation to my iPad. So this is item number 4 in our budget, the Richardson Bay Anchorage Transition Plan. At this point, if there's anyone from the public who would like to speak on those three items that Curtis and Beth just gave us a presentation on, please state your name, and you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
We have a couple people that have mentioned interest in making a statement.
Okay. I think Alden was one of them. I saw his hand pop up.
Mm-hmm. And we have Casey Arndt as well.
Okay, great. So
they wanted to, if Alden, if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself.
Okay, sure. Hello, everyone.
Hey, Alden.
Nice to see you. Happy pandemic to you. So I've been, as you know, offline regarding the RVRA for a couple of months. It's good, and I'm happy and dismayed to see the work that we were doing in the Special Anchorage Association, our Virgie and anchoring and safety program being deployed functionally through the government. And I actually really appreciate all of the help that y'all gave over the time to assist us in doing that as a community. We never were able to receive any funding for it, and as you know, the community didn't have the resources to really pull it off. Yet, I want to mention that there are a couple things that I feel like a lot of our work was copy-pasted, but it's missing some key elements. And I think that some of the work that we are doing is actually being used against the community. And I want to ask you all, you know, how much collaboration you had with the Anchorage community in developing these protocols. I think that, I think you're making big mistakes about regarding how you think people will respond to the idea of an outsider or the government searching their boat. If joining into this program suddenly makes their boat non-transferable and they basically just taken a gun and pointed at their foot and pulled the trigger, I think that you've strongly disincentivized participation. And I really recommend that the board directs staff to return to this issue with actual direct communication and collaboration with the community on ways that we can partner in creating, safety and anchoring guidelines, actually implementing these things. We did a lot of work on this, and I'm seeing some pieces missing. So I'm actually available for that. I'm going to, now that things are, but I think that we should probably bring this up in the Special Anchorage Association, and I feel like we need more community input on this one. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alden. I like your background.
Thank you. Me too.
Okay.
It looks like we've got Rebecca Schwartz.
Okay, Rebecca.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Just perfect, Rebecca.
Wonderful. Hi, I'm Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg. I'm the San Francisco Bay Program Director with Audubon, California. It's great to see so many familiar faces here, and to those who I don't already know, hi. So I have some prepared comments that I'm going to read. I'll also provide these via email. My apologies for not being able to get them to you before the meeting. The first is that in speaking on the transition plan specifically, we really appreciate all the hard work that has gone into this, and specifically the focus on protecting and restoring eelgrass in Richardson Bay, which, as you all know, is where the perspective that Audubon, California is coming from here. not just for the benefits that it provides to the birds, but for the people who live, work, and play on and around Richardson Bay. We support and appreciate the continued focus from RBRA staff and board on identifying and following through on enforcement priorities, both in this transition plan and also as shown through actions over the past year. I'm really disappointed to say that at this time we cannot support the staff recommendation to approve the transition plan as it states. And it brings me no joy to say that. There are a few deficiencies that we feel make it so that it doesn't substantively live up to the direction that BCDC has given. But we would love to continue working with RBRA to refine those pieces. So there's a few areas where there's those deficiencies. The first is that it doesn't include a sunset date for the legacy anchor outs. Without those dates, I think it's hard to have the transparency that's going to be required to gain any sort of informed compliance, but also it therefore lacks measures against which the RBRA can be held accountable. I know that BCDC Enforcement Committee requested a transition plan that removes all illegal anchor outs in 5 years. I don't necessarily think that that's necessarily feasible with the approach that we're talking about here. At the same time, the transition plan talks about 20 years and there's still being a dozen boats left. So I think between that 5 years that BCDC is asking for and really what we have here, which is no end in sight, I think we need to come up with something that's going to be specific and measurable and that speaks more towards what BCDC is asking for. The next piece is that I love policy direction number 5 that's talking about, it says it a lot more eloquently in there. But we support policy direction number 5, which is talking about eelgrass and supporting, protection restoration. Specifically, we really support the idea of these zones. In order for Audubon, California to, officially support a zoned approach, there are a few things that we need to clarify. The first is that on page 9, the transition zone describes this eelgrass protection zone, where existing vessels would be allowed to occupy the anchor and moor. We have some updated language that we would like to see in there that makes it more specific that newly arrived vessels will not be allowed to anchor or moor there. And if boats that are already there, for any reason leave and return, that when they come back, they don't return to that zone. They return to the anchoring zone. So I have the specific language that I can provide. And then on page 9, part C, the anchoring zone talks about future consideration of whether to put a mooring balls in there. We would like to see this transition plan include stronger language identifying moving away from ad hoc anchoring, even in that anchoring zone, and instead towards a conservation mooring program so that visiting boats don't continue degrading eelgrass. For the rest of our comments, I'm going to hand it over to Casey Arndt. The last thing I'm going to say is that in terms of the BCDC presentation, we talk about efforts that will be happening over the next 2 years. But the non-compliant vessels in that timeline for safe and seaworthy are only listed as subject to removal. And I think that if we want to sell this, as really we're getting the majority of the work done in 2 years, we need to be specific that, what is actually going to happen in those 2 years other than enrolling people in the program, which I think is a great first step. And we have a lot of support for safe and seaworthy, which Casey will talk about more. So I'm available for any questions, happy to help on any language. I'll be submitting this to you all. And again, can't support the staff recommendation to approve the transition plan at this time.
Okay, thank you, Rebecca. We have someone else who'd like to...
Casey Arndt wanted to speak.
Okay, Casey.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Casey Arndt, and I'm the Center Director for Richardson Bay Audubon Center and Sanctuary in Tiburon and a colleague of Rebecca's. I would like to spend just a couple of minutes commenting specifically on the Safe and Seaworthy program. Audubon California supports the effort to bring boats into compliance with the RBRA regulations. Though it's not really specifically related to environmental concerns, we do have some comments about the program and how it may affect the implementation of it. Specifically talking about item 6, as far as criminal activity, you know, we do appreciate the desire for a community that lives on the water to be free of illegal activity, but we are concerned about the equity issues that are surrounding kind of tying criminal activity to direct housing. So we would like this specific item to be vetted more closely. For item 9, the potential vessel replacement, again, we appreciate the flexibility that's afforded by leaving potential vessel replacement at the discretion of staff such as the harbor master and the assistant harbor master. We do worry that there could be unintended discrimination, and this has nothing to do with the existing staff. We absolutely have full faith in the existing staff. We do just want to make sure that, you know, quote unquote, problematic mariners don't have inadequate rights as far as mariners are concerned in the transition plan. And so we would like to ask that there's an alternative solution for the approval of vessel replacement that could combat any potential discrimination. We would also like to see documentation of outreach efforts conducted to bring the mariner community along in the development of the Safe and Seaworthy program. And as Audubon California, we've been helping out with some of that outreach effort, and we are happy to continue to assist in that area, helping mariners sign up for this program if that is something that RBRA would like to see. And that pretty much concludes my quick comments. Thank you so much for the opportunity to steal the floor for a little bit. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Casey. Is there anyone else like to speak?
We have a few more. Priscilla, would you like to go?
Sure, thank you. My name is Priscilla Njuguna. I'm the Enforcement Program Manager at BCDC. So I just have a some prepared comments that I would like to share with you. I would begin by stating our gratitude for the support and progress that the RBRA has had and in their collaborative approach with us on developing a transition plan. And we support the goals of the Safe and Seaworthy program to ensure that any vessel on the water is operable and legally compliant and has a properly functioning ground tackle. The effort put into the transition plan is laudable and represents significant progress. We're concerned, however, with some of the elements of the transition plan that you're being asked to adopt this evening, and had hoped that we would be able to negotiate some elements of the disagreement with your staff over the course of the upcoming weeks before this plan is made final. One of our primary concerns is the timeline that's set forth in the plan for transitioning vessels. As you mentioned, there is no sunset date that's been set, and as has been discussed by other people who provided their comments, our enforcement committee has previously informed the RBRA that the transition plan should take 5 years, with the understanding that there might be some leeway upwards, but not upwards to 20 years. And we recognize the challenges in providing housing options and securing liveaboard marina slips for the current occupants of vessels. However, once again, we'd expect that in a much shorter time frame than what's been presented so far, which is 10 to 20 years, there'd be no remaining vessels on the anchorage. This is something that we would like to continue discussing with staff at the RBRA and with your board, in the hopes that we can agree to a mutually acceptable time period to accomplish a transition. We also have concerns about the proposed October 2021 timeframe for completing the Safe and Seaworthy certification of vessels. This is more than 15 months away, and we would expect that the Safe and Seaworthy certifications would be completed in a more timely manner, but we appreciate the clarification that we got from Curtis's presentation about how the process is going to work out. But we also note that the plan is missing a need to include the period of time within which the following categories of non-complying vessels should be abated. A vessel, for example, that fails to enroll in the safe and seaworthy program, an enrolled vessel that fails to achieve the approved legacy status for the RBRA harbor administrator, and an approved legacy vessel that loses its status for failing to maintain compliance with the approximately 12 requirements of the RBRA safe and seaworthy requirements, policy, and enforcement priorities. The board should also consider that the period in no case should exceed 30 days, and also think about the removal of ground tackle and potentially looking at the flexibility that your chair spoke about in terms of the timeline and what that would entail in terms of creating flexibility around the timeline, so that there's clarity as to how any flexibility would be built in. Finally, to highlight another priority item for BCDC that we would hope to discuss further with staff, BCDC expects that the eelgrass habitat of the bay will be protected and restored, as you've presented, coupled with the overall time period of allowing vessels to remain on the bay. The authorized location for legacy vehicles that are certified could result in harm to sensitive habitat. This is an element of the plan that we would hope to discuss further with your staff. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to share our comments.
Thank you, Priscilla. Appreciate it. Okay. Do we have anyone else?
We have a few more. Joan Cox, would you like to go?
Great. Thank you so much. Good evening, everybody. And thank you, Beth, for the presentation regarding the RBRA's plan. I was interested to hear that the RBRA has no ability to provide or advance housing, since the RBRA and the City of Sausalito signed a letter with Senator Mike McGuire in which we expressed our support for his three-part plan in addressing the issues on Richardson's Bay, which included the development of alternative housing for some of the anchor outs. The City of Sausalito has met with Senator McGuire since sending that letter and has identified a number of potential sites. And of course, while the RBRA is not a landowner, each of its member agencies is. And the senator is providing a unique opportunity to build now or next year low-income supportive housing that otherwise might have to wait 5 to 10 years. And so I think it would behoove all of us to collaborate in identifying potential sites in which we could provide supportive housing, not just for anchor outs, but for other challenged populations in each of our towns. So I think that RBRA has a unique opportunity to act as the conduit for those ongoing discussions, and I would look forward to collaborating with RBRA to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Joan.
Carrie Thomas, would you like to go?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. I have just three prepared comments from the Marin Conservation League. We accept the enforcement priority plan as a step in the right direction and appreciate that. The second comment is that a sunset date for deferred enforcement needs to be set in the transition plan in order to assure that the momentum continues to move forward with the plan. And the third comment is an appreciation for the specific zones of eelgrass enhancement that were noted, and both the restoration, protection, and anchorage. We think that over the time that you're going to be slowly decreasing the amount of boats, in coordination with that, the eelgrass restoration zone should also be increasing. So I hope that makes sense. So as boats are slowly leaving the anchorage, then more eelgrass could be restored. And those are our comments. Thank you very much for hearing us.
Thank you very much.
It looks like we have one person left, Barbara.
Yeah. I'm Barbara Sossman, and I've spoken before you many times, and I'd like to first of all say that I am pleased that there seems to be some movement. It's not quite where you should be, but nevertheless, you seem to be working hard on this, and at least you're willing to consider, even though you're saying it's sometime in the future, what BCDC is asking for. And I'm going to repeat what I think most of this, or all of the speakers have said, and that is that the sunset date should not be eliminating enforcement or weakening enforcement. It should be for terminating having no more anchor outs on the bay. And as BCDC has suggested, we fully support the five-year time target date. And I'd like to say that in terms of it feels to me like you're relying maybe too much on COVID. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with that. It may be, you know, maybe it will mean that people will move off the bay. So I don't think that should be a major reason, as it seems to be, for your position. From my experience in the world and dealing with this sort of thing and other things, setting a target date is really very beneficial for making sure things are moved along. If you don't have a target date, then it is much more likely to slip. You're likely to not work as hard, perhaps. So, you know, things may happen when you get closer or move along, but nevertheless, having that target date is psychologically, very helpful. And 30 years is far too long for us to have waited so far. So, we think that that's, reason to have a date. Doesn't matter if you don't have the money. Everybody understands that. You have other policies that you don't have the money for. And lastly, about the eelgrass, one of the possibilities is having anchors, people anchoring with better gear, but anchoring in eelgrass beds. Eelgrass may be damaged, but that's no reason to have anybody anchoring in eelgrass. We would absolutely oppose any anchorage in eelgrass beds. And we still have our bird surveys coming along. I mean, much of the bay is also important bird habitat. It isn't just for eelgrass. And so we would urge you to relook at that alternative for having, it doesn't even make sense the way it's identified. It's protected area, and yet you would allow some moorings in that areas of eelgrass. So anyway, with that, we urge you to work a little harder on this and to work with, especially with BCDC, to try and make a more firm plan. Thanks.
Thank you, Barbara. I love your filing system behind you.
Listen, I cleaned it up. You should have seen it before.
All right. Thank you. Is there any other public comment?
I'd like to make a comment.
So I believe Alden was in line to speak.
Okay.
I already spoke. I shouldn't double.
Yeah, Alden already spoke.
Okay. Oh, you already spoke.
Thank you, yes. Rebecca. I've been just filling the chat.
My apologies.
Thank you very much, Rebecca.
Hello?
So do we have any more public open time?
Yeah, Robert Rourke is there.
Okay, great.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. As you know, I was in a lawsuit with the RBRA, and I settled it. In retrospect, I never should have settled it, although I have been subjected to a pretty rigorous inspection by 8 people from the RBRA who came aboard with hired experts. And as a result of that, at the ADR, the Alternative Dispute Resolution, I was locked in a little room while 11 people showed up on your side. And it was amazing how easy it was for your alleged expert, who I didn't realize who he was, but who had an issue with me from 20 years of knowing him in Bodega Bay, where I resided on my boat happily until the slip fees became untenable. And the lies and the slanders that were fed to that federal judge by your organization is just amazing. So since you, I don't know what happened, but Sausalito decided to pull out of the RBRA, and now they've become very problematic. They've closed all access to the public trust lands and waters, and they've enacted ordinances that are basically illegal. So here comes a round of lawsuits now, and I'm much better equipped to handle those for a lot of people. And I'll just put it this way. We're expected to adhere to the law as citizens. And in regard to public agencies, the citizen has a right to expect that a public agency would adhere to rules too. And when they don't, when they break their own rules that they know they're breaking, that's a civil rights violation. Now, the judge in my case was asking for a test case on the civil rights violation because she gave me a 22-page order telling me to rewrite the amended complaint, stipulating that the civil rights violation is under the Bain Act or something that she was interested in. Okay, I just filed a new motion in federal court against the violations that Sausalito has just imposed on everyone for egress and, you know, access to the bay, basically, which is a constitutional right under the Fourth Amendment and the state of California Constitution. If you want us to be able to fix up our boats, we need to get access to the bay where we can actually load something. I have a 2,000-pound engine. I've been to every marina available, even the marinas where I had a deal at Napa Marina to take the boat in. And I went back there. The guy wanted a $5,000 cash deposit. I went back there with the $5,000, and he said, well, we're too full, too bad. I went back with $10,000 and tried to bribe my way in. He still wouldn't do it. So this is the kind of thing that's happening because of the bad publicity and the lies and slanders that have been tossed at me personally and other people like me who are not lawbreakers. Every time someone steals something from my car or my boat in Sausalito and I say something to the cops, they don't do a darn thing about it. We know we have a crime problem out there, and it's a police matter. It's not up to the Galilee Association to tear out the dock under the guise of, well, there's problem people at night. That's a police problem. And you've got Marine sheriffs at your disposal who, I don't know, they seem to have the ability to find out who's on a probation out there because they allow the people that are on probation out there to do the dirty work. Someone absolutely did sabotage my anchor when I went aground. Absolutely. And I don't know what to do about that. I pulled myself off. I'm well grounded now, and I'm willing to move the darn boat anywhere you want. But to have a federal judge tell me that I'm not on the boat enough because somebody on your side told her that is just wrong. I've been on the boat a lot, and I do have other things in life that I have to attend to, which is one of them is to make a living so I can afford.
Okay, you got about 10 seconds.
That's all. Anyway,
okay.
If you don't follow your own rules, you're liable to a lawsuit, and I'm lining up the people right now. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Do we have anyone else who'd like to speak on this matter? You want to switch the screen? Beth, are you there?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. I thought maybe we lost into the time zone freeze there. All right. So is there, I guess there's no more public comment?
I don't show any further public comment interest, no.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. All right, let's bring back to the board. So we have a transition plan here. We have some resolutions. And we have public comment right now. So, Kate, let's start off with you.
Well, I'd like to ask first if Beth or Curtis have anything that they would like to say in any of the comments made by the public.
Okay.
Sure, I can. Let me tackle some of them working backwards on
all
the
right.
comments. Yes, actually, the eelgrass restoration zone. It's referenced that the protection zone could the restoration zone could expand with as vessels leave, as she noted. The comment in the BCDC presentation was not intended to cut off any collaboration with Sausalito and the member agencies and Senator McGuire to support housing alternatives, just that it was just meant to indicate that the mission of RBRA wasn't inclusive of providing housing alternatives, but that doesn't prevent it from supporting collaborative efforts. It's the agency's intention to work with BCDC further on, refining as we go forward. As for the comments about, I think Robert Wark's comment just now about criminal activity on the Anchorage, speaks to a reason for including that as a consideration for being able to maintain your legacy status. It benefits the anchor routes who are there if their vessels are not subject to theft and vandalism, and so we want to help support efforts to maintain safety for the vessels that are on the bay. As for replacement vessels, yes, that has to be very carefully done and under scrutiny of consideration for how that might be granted. The other option is not to allow it at all, and I felt that was at least having that as available for someone who may be under extreme conditions was worth some of the considerations that she brought up. On the comments about from Rebecca about the eelgrass zones, the transition plan is intended to be umbrella language, that it's intended to indicate that the specifics will be developed in collaboration with the stakeholders, including Audubon. So it's not intended to be a prescriptive yes and no measures. It's intended to be more that the board is saying, yes, we want to look into providing some zones, and then we'll engage in a process for the specifics that would be undertaken within each of the zones. And that language would be subject to further vetting and review and ultimately adoption. And to Alden's point about including the anchorage, we did have a special work session in February. It was very well attended by many anchor outs. And in fact, at the March meeting, when we unveiled this transition plan, received a lot of support from the anchor outs present that evening that recognized that this was a long time coming and that efforts needed to be done to clean up the anchorage, and that expressed a willingness to work on that project. And so we have moved forward with those intentions from the workshop and for the comments made at the last time this plan was presented. And if the board members have anything else they want me to address, I'm happy to do so.
Kate, you have any questions for Beth?
I don't, Beth. I thought that was very helpful, and that you actually addressed a number of the issues that I will address in a minute here, too. But did you want me to go ahead, Jim, and make a comment?
Yeah, we're going to have Curtis, too. But why don't you talk, just have Beth. You want to have Curtis talk first? And then,
if Curtis wants to add something, sure.
Yeah, Curtis, is there anything you want to add to the that was brought up?
Yeah, to build off of Beth's points, the anchorage is identified on nautical charts as an anchorage. And I think in the future, what's nice about this transition plan is it starts that conversation of what areas could be identified as eelgrass protection zone. And I think someday when we've got a lot of good data, more good data, and we've had those conversations and we've had those collaborations with other sister regional agencies, I would love to see the charts reflect protected zones. That way mariners coming into Richardson's Bay can look at, I mean, that's what the nautical charts are prepared for. That's what the United States Coast Pilot is prepared for, so that somebody coming in from the Pacific Northwest or down south or wherever, they can look at these documents and say, whoops, I can't park there. I can't park in the bird sanctuary. So I think that's something that's going to take time, but this program helps start that conversation. And I think we need that flexibility now. I also agree with Beth's points about, moving forward on this plan. We've gone through the process. We've talked to lots of people. What's different now is BCDC is really, clear about their expectations, and we're taking action. We're moving forward. It's time. We need to do something. So I think that's what this is. In terms of, the concerns about, discrimination and equity, I talk with law enforcement on a practically a daily basis. And let me just throw them a pitch real quick. The folks that I work with in law enforcement are some of the best people I've ever met. They are constantly objective and equitable and open-minded. They walk into situations where they are, they know a lot about the background of a situation before they walk into it. And yet they still walk in with an open mind, looking for solutions. So that said, they influence me, and I understand the concerns. And frankly, I think that by us establishing standards, by establishing those expectations, it gives staff something to rely on to remain objective and to remain consistent. And I like that. I like that. So it's not my personal opinion. So that keeps that out of it. Beyond that, I think Beth covered it. Any other questions, I'm happy to answer for you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Curtis. All right, Kate, let's start with you.
So, I think if there's one thing that we've all really come to appreciate in the several years that we've been working on these issues that really have led us to the development of this plan, is that perfection is difficult to attain. And I do think that we all know a tremendous amount of work has gone into this document with a lot of input from various stakeholders. And I think it is important that we move forward. And I want to underline what Beth said, because a couple of the speakers raised issues that I think are important. First is, nothing about adopting this transition plan precludes RBRA and BCDC from continuing to discuss an appropriate sunset date and other issues. And I know those conversations will be ongoing. Second, the work that we have done and the collaboration that RBRA has had with Sausalito and working with Senator McGuire on housing issues and supporting affordable housing expansion opportunities is something that I think we all feel very committed to, and there's nothing about this plan that precludes us or in any way jeopardizes. In fact, I think it supports those ongoing issues. And there also is the ongoing conversation that this plan does not preclude to develop the eelgrass restoration plan. That's an integral part of this plan. And frankly, and finally, the anchor out participation every step of the way has really been tremendous. And I think that that's informed and enriched this plan. So I believe that we should move forward, recognizing that we've got plenty of conversations that will be ongoing, that we need to keep ongoing. But this is an important framework to guide action by Curtis and other staff going forward. Thank you.
Okay, great. Marty, do you have any comments?
Got to unmute.
There we go. There we go.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
So, I can hear you.
I really appreciate the previous comments. I think that with the transition plan, we are taking a very affirmative step in basically offering to work with BCDC to create a program that is manageable for Richardson Bay, that works within the permutations of the special area plan, which of course is BCDC's purview. I think though that in terms of immediate goals, the safe and seaworthy part of our document is what is really essential. It's something that we can accomplish in very short order, and we'll really, by implementing it, accomplish go very far to accomplishing many of our goals, like improved management of the bay, limiting new persons and vessels from settling into the anchorage, minimizing the risk of vessels running adrift, et cetera, et cetera. I think that the sooner we adopt conservation moorings and abandon anchored tackle, the better our eelgrass load will be. And I think that we really have to keep our eyes very, very firmly focused on the ecological security and restoration of wildlife on Richardson Bay. I think that ultimately, our vision includes a bay that is safe for boaters, for occasional visitors, and will no longer be a location for permanent residents. We will find alternate housing for folks that are out on the bay. That's my take on this.
Okay, thank you, Marty. David.
Sure. Let me start by thanking Beth and Curtis, as well as everyone who commented tonight, and then, as has been mentioned, the previous Anchorage Association contributions to what we have before us. It does, as has been said, represent a tremendous amount of work and a substantial point of progress from where we've been. A couple meetings ago, I thought that something we needed was clarity, and I made a call for some clarity, which will provide objectivity and standards in what we want to, how we want to proceed. And that was a point that Curtis made a moment ago. And I think this will provide that. This document will provide that. As Kate mentioned, perfection can be an obstacle to progress. And I think the pursuit of that in this vein would be not a wise thing to do, because perfection's defined differently by different people. So this gives us a substantial stepping off point to move forward. And as has also been mentioned, ongoing conversations can happen as we progress, and we can course correct slightly as we move forward. And then finally, as Marty just mentioned a moment ago, I think one of the immediate concerns is safety from a couple of different perspectives. For residents that are landbound, in close proximity to the anchorage, this will go a fair distance to preventing some of the situations we've seen in the past with boats going adrift, and then also making progress and keeping an eye on the ecological safety and the eelgrass protections that we all want to see happen to maintain our environment. So I support this document as it's for us tonight, and thank you again, everyone, for all the work.
Great. Thank you, David. So I've, we spent the last 15 months putting this document together, having public meetings, meeting with mariners, getting a lot of good input. And this transition plan, I think, is actually a great foundation for us to work on. And I look at the transition plan with these two resolutions as a living document. And, Rebecca, I would have been totally shocked if you came out 100% for this plan. But on the issue of the legacy date, we understand that. I mean, it won't be 20 years, and it's not going to be 5. We got to come up with a plan that satisfies BCDC and also our needs, and we got to be realistic in what we're trying to do here. I mean, I'll say one thing. This past, 2 weeks has really opened our eyes as a community of a lot of issues we have to deal with in society that, we kind of had a blind eye to. And for decades and decades, this area had a blind eye to, too, and we've kind of taken this on to address issues where we can support a variety of individuals. And that's why our timeline has never really coincided with so many environmentalists in BCDC, because we recognize we're dealing with a very unique community here that we have to somehow somewhat support, but also meet the end goal. There's a lot of little points that were brought up tonight. Priscilla from the BCDC, you know, you're kind of like the mothership for us. And obviously we're trying our best to work with your organization. We are also trying to come up with a plan that we feel that we can actually be successful with, you know. So I support the two resolutions. I support the transition plan and the seaworthy plan, knowing that these are living documents, that the board can make changes, and that we have to look at some of these comments that were brought up tonight to see if we can improve this document in the next month or two. But I support my colleagues on this endeavor, and hopefully the community supports us too as we move forward. So, Beth, can we have a vote on the two resolutions and the transition plan and seaworthy plan, please, on the item four?
First, let's have a motion. How about two separate motions on the two resolutions?
Yeah. Okay, can I have a motion on the first resolution, which is 0620 on the transition plan?
I'll move.
Second? Do I have a second?
I'll second
that. That was Marty. Or David.
That's Marty. Great. Good. Beth, can you take a vote?
Okay, Board Member Kulik?
Yes.
Board Member Winter?
Yes.
Board Member Sears?
Yes.
Chair Wickham?
Yes. Okay, can I have a motion for the resolution 0720 on the safe and seaworthy requirements?
I think Marty should move that one.
Yeah, Marty should be the one. Come on, Marty. So last night.
Okay.
Second.
So moved.
Second.
Take a vote, please.
Board Member Kulik?
Yes.
Board Member Winter?
Yes.
Vice Chair Sears?
Yes.
Chair Wickham?
Yes. Okay. Cool. Congratulations. I think it's a great start. We got the message there. We got some work to do on this, but at least we have a plan now kind of in place that we need to make better, as we move forward. So Curtis, thank you. Beth, thank you very much for everything you've done. And we'll move on to, I move my agenda up here to the next item, which is, God, this is a long report, Beth. Curtis, you taking notes?
It's open time for public expression.
Okay. All right. So now we have public open time for public expression. So anyone who'd like to come and chat in the door, please, you have 3 minutes, take your name, and we're open. From Rebecca, okay, go ahead, Rebecca.
Hi, I come to you now with some not so great news, which I was perhaps going to share via email, but you're all here. Audubon, California has not been immune to the current economic situation in our country. And I was unfortunately a casualty of that today. So as of tomorrow, I will no longer be with Audubon, California. I was laid off, but laid off with no malice on either side. I have nothing but love for Audubon, California and the Audubon Network and the work. And, I mean, my supervisor was in tears when laying me off today. So, you know, if the economic situation turns around, we all hope that, you know, I can come back. The other thing is that, you know, I do come from a consulting background, and that was how I originally started with Audubon California, was as a consultant on this particular project. So it's very likely that I will stay engaged from the perspective of Coastal Policy Solutions, which is my LLC. And I look forward to continuing this work. I might be wearing a different hat next time you hear from me, but don't get too excited. You're not going to not hear from me. So thank you all for this. And I know there's a lot of transitions happening with RBRA, and, you know, it's a weird time out there, but I wanted you to hear it from me and have an opportunity to, you know, say goodbye for now. But I will probably still be popping up. So thank you all for your hard work, for everybody who commented, for the people who come to these meetings. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. I know it's been tough times, and it's always a pleasure to have you at our meetings. I love your smile, your energy, you know, your desire. So it keeps us, you know, on track too. So stay in touch. Hopefully things change around, turn around, you get a job back. And so thank you for everything you've done for us locally here and being part of this whole process. So thank you, Rebecca. Okay. Now we have tears coming down. So the next person. Anyone else?
I could say goodbye to Rebecca. Rebecca, it's been really wonderful to collaborate and joust with you and all kinds of things. Thank you. I'm glad that for you that you will miss the storms that are to come. Yeah, I wish you really the best in your journey. Thank you for protecting the nature. In terms of projecting the other form of wildlife, which is the Anchorage community, I wanted to really encourage the board and staff to start thinking of ways, if you are going to be implementing these things, how you can start bringing some economic boost into the community. We, you know, our original Burgee program and the Anchorage Safety Program, you know, incorporated the service of the best divers in Richardson Bay who happen to live on the Anchorage and the people that scrape the boats and the people that are trusted to come onto the boats. Like, you're not going to, Curtis, you know, for all of his great qualities, is probably not going to be a welcome visitor or his assistant harbor master on the vessels of many of our very sovereignty-oriented individuals that are members of this community. The reason why we focus on a community-based solution and why we tried to do this was really taking into account some cultural and psychological factors that I think have, you know, been maybe overlooked for just efficiency reasons in these plans. But I really encourage the board and staff to start figuring out ways that we can start supporting members of the community who you know very well, who, you know, just to remind you, like, your greatest collaborators on the Anchorage, those guys will raise the boat for beer money or for gas. And if you pay Parker, it's going to cost you $25,000. And this has been going on for a really long time. And I really encourage you to take seriously, like, bring economic opportunity into the community. We've spoken about this so many times. And don't get the Anchorage on the back foot. The natives will get restless. We really planned for this for a long time. And I apologize. I've had to take a step back due to my own traumas around the Anchorage. But I really care about the community. And I want to see them supported. Really, with 50 grand, we could have done this a couple years ago, you know, and we really did try to do it with gas money and it was impossible. So please support the community to help itself, and don't do it too top down. You need to, and final note, I understand that you can you're communicating with members of the Anchorage at the meetings, but if in the middle of between meetings, you're meeting with the state or you're meeting with Audubon or you're meeting with BCDC, meet with Anchorage community as much as you meet with Audubon. Meet with, like, and I, final note, BCDC really needs to meet with the Anchorage community because they're making decisions that are completely abstract of the human element. So I really encourage the BCDC who's listening here to create formal meetings with the Anchorage community that they are legislating out of existence. Please meet with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Alden, very much. Always a pleasure to hear your comments.
Thanks.
Is there anyone else like to say anything during this open time for public expression? Okay. Is there anyone else? Hearing none, we'll bring it back to reports and comments. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that, Rebecca mentioned that she got laid off, and that's a tough one, but I know when I came on RBRA 4 years ago, Marty was on the board here, and he's making a big transition because he's moved across country or across the world from Belvedere to Tiburon. And so he actually has to step down now from being on the RBRA because he's no longer a Belvedere City Council member. And I actually, you know, hopefully our fellow board members will have something to say about Marty. And Marty's alternate, Claire McCaffrey, will be taking his place until the election, I guess, in November or when her term ends. But Marty, why don't you, well, Kate, do you have anything to say about Marty?
I sure do have something to say about Marty.
Yeah, I figured you would because you're probably the longest, you know, the two of you have been around for a long time.
So I really want to express my appreciation of Marty. You know, really, I think it was because of Marty and a lot of the hard work and the vision and the compassion and the intelligence he has that set us on the road that has gotten us here today. And Marty was sort of there at the beginning when we really tried to create a holistic view and engage all stakeholders and educate the public about all the various issues that are at play on the Anchorage. And that really had not been done by the agency effectively. And Marty, I think you deserve tremendous credit on then serving on the RBRA subcommittee that really launched this effort to make sure that we were looking at the environment, its safety, at health and wellness issues for folks who are on the water, and really just making sure that we were engaging all stakeholders and looking at all issues. And that brought a tremendous amount to this agency. So thank you. We're going to miss you. I don't know why you would move to Tiburon, but David is going to tell us why.
Yeah, okay. David, you have any comments about your new resident in Tiburon?
Yeah, Tiburon just got a little, a whole lot smarter and more magnanimous with time and effort for Marty having come here with us. You know, I think I'm the least tenured elected official on this board, and I was elected in 2017, and I shortly thereafter joined the Marin Telecommunications Agency, and then last year RBRA, and Marty and I have overlapped in those two areas, and I've seen him out in town a bit too. You know, I, as someone newly elected, you have a lot to learn, and I was certainly representative of that. But Marty helped me a lot, certainly with MTA, in helping to understand some of the issues and some of the history of the issues, and also with BCDC, we've talked, with us here tonight with RBRA, we've talked to a lot of issues offline, and he's been very helpful in that regard. And he was able to give good advice because he's been a distinguished public servant for a long time. So I've certainly been better for sharing some committees with Marty, more intelligent for it. Welcome to Tiburon, and thank you for everything you've done.
Great. Well, I'll tell you, David, be careful, because when I came on RBRA and Kate was chair and Marty was around, I finally realized when the two of them conspired to make me chair of the RBRA. So you're next in line, so don't smile too much, because he had a, I go, what? Okay. So Marty, I know this is your last evening with us. You've seen a lot. We've gone through a lot the past 4 years. Do you have any words of wisdom you want to pass on to us? And additionally, when we go back to live meetings, I'd love to have you come down and maybe we'll give you a little RBRA recognition treat. So Marty, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, first of all, I just want to say how much I'm going to miss all of you. This is a really a stellar group of hardworking public servants, especially Beth Pollard, who's just been amazing as an executive director. She's really helped us with our visioning. I want to also remind everyone of Herb Weiner, who passed away from Sausalito, because he was, as we say in my community, he was a real mensch. He could really see the other side. And it was that spirit, I think, that actually came from Herb, that fostered the collegiality that came from the board to the community, to the stakeholders, and basically created the atmosphere that would give us or yield us some success in our visioning. I think that we've still got a ways to go with BCDC, but I think that we've got the right ideas. And when you have the right ideas and the right facts on your side, ultimately you will prevail. I also want to, I want to thank Curtis for the tremendous job that he's done. Beth again. And I will miss all of you tremendously. But I'm here in Tiburon. I'm still sailing on Richardson Bay. I'm going to be working like crazy to raise money for our library. And also to elect Joe Biden as president. Thank you very much.
Oh, Mill Valley, we don't handle national politics. Never mind.
That's classy.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Okay, so we have a special guest here. So if someone would like to talk about your legacy, because Claire just texted me saying she has a few words to say because she's going to fill your big shoes that you have on the board. So, Claire?
Thank you, Jim. Marty, thank you very much for all your hard work. You and I have worked closely on the city council in Belvedere, and every time I talk about you at the city council level, I say the same thing, which is RVRA and this board has come so much further than ever in my term in Belvedere in elected office, and it's really thanks to you. You've really brought, as Kate said, the human element to it, and you've kept the rudder in the water to keep this project going forward, and it's going to benefit everybody. It's going to benefit the Anchorites and Audubon and BCDC, RBRA, all of us over time when this is completed. So thank you very much, Marty. I'm going to miss you on the City Council, miss you here at RBRA, and I'm looking forward to being a part of this board with so many good friends, Kate and Jim. And then one last thing I would like to say is Beth Pollard, as you all know, was an interim city manager for us in Belvedere. And Beth did an absolutely outstanding job for Belvedere in a time when we needed her. And thank you so much for that, Beth. And you've brought your great, calm, strong leadership skills to this transition plan. I can see the magic of Beth Pollard behind the wheel here. And it's great to see you, and I'm sorry that I'm not going to be able to work more with you, but thank you so much for bringing RBRA and the transition plan as far as it's come. Well done.
Thank you, Claire, very much. And that leaves one last comment here for the four of us, and that is about Beth Pollard. Because I think one of the biggest highlights I found when I came on the RBRA and we started working this transition is hiring an executive director. And I was so impressed with Beth. I actually was trying to get her to become our city manager in Mill Valley, and she refused to do that. But Beth, I mean, on behalf of the board, and I think Kate will say some things. I know this is your last meeting. You've been an inspiration for me in the sense that when I come to these meetings, I know everything is done well. Curtis, you're going to have a high bar, really high bar to manage, because the complexities of dealing with a variety of groups of people and bringing them together, you've just done a great job. And I know now why in your prior job, they made a Beth Pollard Day for the city when you retired as city manager back then. But Kate, do you have any words of you want to pass on to Beth being her last, day with us?
No, Beth.
No, don't go.
No, I mean, it's hard to appreciate Beth enough. I think that the turnaround that we've really seen in this agency has both been attributable to important and strong voices on the board, but also the change that we made in staffing and hiring Beth. And that really enabled us, I think it helped us, it certainly helped me as board members, and I think I probably speak for all of us in saying that it really, Beth, you have really helped us organize our thoughts and improve our thoughts and do the work that needed to be done to educate ourselves. The eelgrass study is an example. You're also a tremendous collaborator and have been really great in establishing relationships with people on the water, with people in Sausalito, with people at BCDC. That whole skill set of yours is has just been tremendously beneficial to this agency. So I think we're all sorry to see you go, but I know you've been trying to retire for quite a while, and I think we saw you in here with some promise of a real short-term assignment. And then Marty and I got together and made it impossible to leave, right? Because we're tricky. So we're really pleased that you stayed with us and gave this agency everything you've given for so long.
I know she only worked those 960 hours as she's required to by law, right, Beth? Not an hour longer. Okay, so right. David, do you have any comments for Beth there? I know you're a short-termer here, but
I am a short-termer, but I believe in quality over quantity, and in that short time, I've got to see the professionalism and the kind of the body of experience that has led Beth to her level of competency now. And she helped me understand the issues right off the bat. We sat down, had a 2-hour cup of coffee, which probably put her over that, 950 hour limit. But she got me up to speed very quickly, on some very complex issues. And that's the sign of somebody who sees the complex simply and can explain it. So thank you very much, Beth, for helping me understand the issues and for your leadership here.
Great. And Marty, you have any wisdom you want to pass on to Beth for retirement since you stepping down yourself?
Beth and I are retiring at the same time. And
yes.
Beth, I'm looking forward to COVID-19 basically going away so that you and I can resume our lunches in Berkeley. some of my favorite afternoons have been spent with Beth discussing RVRA policy.
Okay, great.
Salt.
That's good. Before Beth, you have any words here, Rebecca did text me saying that congratulations to Marty and you, Beth, and all your great work. She's enjoyed it. And so, Beth, you have any parting shots at us before you drive away in the sunset and enjoy retirement officially?
So I would love to. You've been a pleasure to work with the board members, each and every one of you, really bring both your heart and your mind to the work of this agency and also patience and tenacity to work through the issues. It's really been a fascinating project to work on the confluence and tensions of socioeconomic, systems and conditions, the cultural traditions of anchoring out, the environmental sensitivities, all just tugging and pushing and really coming to a confluence over what is the best thing to do. And the board members, I always felt that you really kept your eye on the ball on really trying to take care in thinking about the people involved as well as the planet that's involved in this. It's really hard work to balance those tensions. And I think you're masterful in guiding us through the last few years. And I've really appreciated working for you. I know you'll be in good hands with Curtis. He's a fast learner and he's really picked up on, I've learned so much from him. I've learned more about boats in the last 2 years than I ever thought I would. I may have to go out and get a boat now. I don't know. In my retirement, we'll see.
Just don't anchor out in the...
I promise. But I did want to also, I thought it was interesting that the two speakers under open time are the two speakers I would like to thank. Personally, Alden Bevington and Rebecca Schwartz-Lesberg. Alden, I met him when I first started in this job, and his vision for the community themselves being the governing agent, if you will, for the Anchorage was very compelling and always brought to mind that what's really important is what does it mean for the people who were involved and the people who are affected need to be part of the solution, need to be part of the governance, need to be there. They're not to be managed, they're to be participatory. And I always took that to heart. And I can assure you, Alden, when you spoke about economic opportunities, there's a lot of boats out there to be fixed for folks to work on. So there's no lack of work. And for Rebecca, I can't imagine Richardson Bay Anchorage zone to, you know, creativity and requirements without you. So I'm sorry to see you go and hope that you continue the good fight for birds and for the environment. And Claire, I wish you all the best in your, and as you undertake this, Marty, I've enjoyed, now we've had two stints together. I've really enjoyed working with you both times. And also Kate, I know you'll be moving into other opportunities soon too, but you always cared about so much about the people involved and always brought it back to what does this mean to people. And Jim, you know, as a guiding leader the last 2 years, or the last year actually, it's only been as chair, always, you know, bringing that perspective of accomplishing both outcomes and the process of how do people fit into it and how do we achieve outcomes at the same time. And lastly, David, thanks for being willing to jump in to this group here. And I know you provide a really good sense of how we can reach solutions in a no-nonsense way, as well as thinking about the people. So with that, thank you very much for all the opportunities and for all I've learned, and good luck.
Thank you, Beth, very, very much. And, we look forward to hear from you in the future. Keep in touch. Like I said, maybe when we get back to normalcy, we'll have you come back and we'll all go out for dinner afterwards. We'll treat you for dinner or something, you know, and I'll pay for it, the whole board. Except for you, Marty. You're a traitor. You left early. Okay, so is there any more staff announcements? All right, hearing none. Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Marty, for everything you've done. Thank you, audience, and Rebecca. Enjoy. It's unfortunate, but you'll make it through. So therefore, I'd like to adjourn the meeting for tonight, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, all of them. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.